is Monday, July 13th. Another edition of No Filter Sports. Eli Zarrett, Bob Page, Denny McClain, not necessarily in that order. Coming to you, we got a great guest today, Ken Holland, the former Red Wing general manager forever, 36 years with the organization, starting as a goalie of all things in 1983 through, of course, 2019, when he then left, when Steve Yzerman came in, decided to take the general manager position with the Edmonton Oilers. We'll talk to him about the fact that the NHL opens training camps today, and Kenny is in Edmonton with his new team. We'll talk about that and all the protocols that they're going to go through and how their system is going to differ necessarily from the NBA and Major League Baseball, etc. But, you know, it seems to me we got a lot of stories on the subject of, I think, overreactions that were happening right now. Denny brought up the fact that we heard just this morning that the Redskins are going to have a contest to name, or the Redskins, meaning Washington's going to have a contest to replace the name Redskins. That had to happen because of, you know, FedEx and all these companies were going to pull money out. So finally, fiduciary, an instance.
But Eli, we wish the Redskins luck with that. And here's why. In recent weeks, some creep named Martin McCauley has squatted on most any nickname you could imagine for the Washington Redskins. He has filed applications with the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office and gotten them. I don't know why our government allows this, but he went ahead and he bought all these names, the Washington Americans, Bravehearts, Federals, Forces, Red Tails, so on and so forth. And he said he spent $20,000 to secure the various trademarks. And under the law, he can charge little Danny Snyder, if the Redskins, you know, select any of these names, a lot of money almost in perpetuity. There is no such thing as PatrickEwing.com. Somebody squatted that name a number of years ago. You can't even use your own name.
These are overreactions.
Listen, there's over. Yeah. You know what? Most of it is BS, Bob. I mean,
BS?
It is. I mean,
Brandon wants to say something.
Brandon, go ahead. Two quick things. PatrickEwing.com is available if you'd like to purchase it, but this is internet. This is, they should have seen this coming. Now I've gone to school with people who their entire job, what put them through college, was buying URL names and then flipping them to companies, you know, buying FordIsGreat.com and then contacting Ford and saying, hey, you tossed me a couple grand, this is yours. So this isn't out of the ordinary. This guy, Martin McCauley, this is an innovator right here.
By the way, it happened before the internet because people used to buy 800 numbers and then sell them for incredible amounts of money. Mm. So there's so many overreactions. Although, and you know, and the shame of it is that most began, I think, with a good purpose in mind. So if certain names are offensive, fine, let's get rid of them. But there's 2,200 high schools that have some type of Native American imagery or name. There's many, many teams in college and pro sports. And let's deal. It's getting closer. We're doing a better job, but everybody's overreacting, trying to, now we're tearing down statues of Thomas Jefferson and we're tearing down statues of George Washington. It's too bad that cancel culture just goes that far and almost pushes out what's a good idea. And the NBA is doing it with this social message. I think we all agree with that. And thank goodness LeBron James, you know what I'm going to put in the back of my uniform? I'm going to put my name, James, that I don't stand for. I stand for more than just, you know, a name in the back of my uniform. I don't need to do that. I need to put Black Lives Matter back.
Eli, here's another thing consider. I want all of you folks who are interested in this topic, and Eli delivered again that fantastic, you know, soliloquy about changing the Redskins' name on the show a couple of weeks ago. But I recommend to you an article on the ESPN website today written by John Keim. You think it's going to be easy to change the name Washington Redskins or to change any name of any pro sport? It's mind-boggling,
Bob, it's
what's involved in this and how long it's going to take.
Bob,
I'm just suggesting the article.
It's already, I think it's already a done deal, to be honest with you, because they're only looking at two names right now, the Red Tails and the Warriors, the Red Tails being a military, black military outfit, and the Warriors could be any military outfit, could be anything at all.
Sure. Going to have to pay Martin McCauley for that, though, Denny.
But he can't buy Warriors. I don't think he can buy Warriors.
You know, there's certain things you can't buy, and we won't go into that now, but the thing about it is, this is a team that started out as the Boston Braves way back in time. And the thing that aggravates me a little bit is Rivera. I've known.
Wait,
Ron,
what team started as the Boston Braves?
The Boston Braves was the Washington
Atlanta
Redskins
Braves
at one time.
Started as the Boston Braves. Said, you mean the football? Yeah, they did too.
The football
team.
Yeah. The thing that upset me over the weekend is Ron Rivera now saying how closely he's working with Mr. Snyder to come up with a new name. Ron Rivera, I did some research over the weekend on Rivera. Rivera's never opened his mouth until this past week about the Redskins, the name, or anything else. And now he's standing up trying to take – I just get upset when I see these guys try to jump on the same train. He says, people used to ask me to go into politics all the time. I didn't want to do that. And he said, because my life is private. He says, I'm not an influencer, but I support my players with anything they want to do. And if they want to kneel before a game, I will let them kneel. So – but he never was vocal about this
so what's
before.
Wrong with
that?
You know what?
He's just
you know what
jumping
if I'm
on the
about?
Train. He's jumping on the train that a lot of people have jumped on. But Charles Barkley said it terrific this morning. He says they're turning this into a laughingstock. It's turning it into a circus. We've gone way too far. And you know what? I don't agree with Charles all the time, although he's the funniest son of a gun in the world. He is absolutely 100% right with this.
Yeah, you know, Denny, here's what I find weird about that. As we all know, Rivera was a great linebacker with the beloved Chicago Bears.
Yep.
He'd been a hell of an NFL head coach, but he got fired because he wasn't winning as much anymore. He jumps, just like Kenny Holland did when he left Detroit, he immediately lands on his feet with the Washington Redskins, one of the most storied franchises in all four of our sports. One of the first things he does, he goes to Danny Snyder and says, we got to change the name. Huh? Ron, you're lucky to have this job. You just got here. But I've come around, Eli. Let's change the Redskins' name. Let's go ahead. Now, the Atlanta Braves have reiterated that they're not going to change
name. Right.
But the Indians are looking into it.
Yeah. Right, but they've told fans they are, quote, looking at the tomahawk chop.
Yeah.
How are they going to stop fans from doing that? And the same goes for Florida State. Just leave well enough alone. Mm.
Well, you know, it's the same, the Confederate flag, et cetera, at NASCAR. I think that was a good move. How are you going to stop people from smuggling them in? I guess you can't, but I think they made a good decision. But in terms of the LeBron James and the Black Lives Matter and all that, why is the NBA going so far? You see what Greg Popovich said? He said people will enjoy the games and the athleticism when they restart now. But the message that the league wants is to send one of equity and no injustice for anyone and making sure people have to think about it every day. No, they don't want to have to think about it at least when they're watching basketball for 2 hours. And some of these names, come on now, they're all one side. You can put on the back of your uniform, Black Lives Matter, say their names, I can't breathe, peace, equality, freedom, blah, blah, blah. You know, come on, a stand up, ally, anti-racist. Let's just play the games. This is a crazy overreaction.
Eli, that's right. Because
it's one of those headlines you go, really? Are you kidding me?
Listen, once they start playing the games, the messages become less and less and less, and you'll hear less and less about it, and it'll take its own life, whatever that might be. Its own life will be taken, but I suggest the messages will be, by the end of the year and all of the hoopla that goes into the playoffs and naming a champion, we won't hear much about it.
We still see him in the back of the uniforms.
Very bad image-wise for the NBA. And now here came Lakers guard Rajon Rondo, who broke his hand over the weekend. Mm-hmm. Here's a guy. He's made more than $100 million in his 14-year career. He shows up, all expenses paid, at the really lovely Grand Destino Tower at Disney World for this. He immediately trashed his accommodations, likening it to a Motel 6 and an Instagram post that featured him giving a middle finger emoji. And then J.R. Smith did the same thing. So, oh man, these accommodations they're not. It's amazing to me. It's like the fans are so hungry and they're starving and they're rioting in the streets outside. And somebody comes in and says, Rashawn, JR, the peasants have no bread. The peasants have no bread. And they said, well, let them eat cake.
Okay, time out for a second. I see where you're coming from. You're not the first one to say that. But you see, this is cancel culture now. We want to cancel Rajon Rondo for saying that. The point is, it was a joke. And I'll tell you something.
He was pissed at his accommodations in a luxury hotel.
Well, but you got to take it with a grain of salt. He wasn't. How do you know how pissed he was? How do you know? The point is, it was stupid to do it. It was stupid to put it on Instagram. But he was pissed. And you know what? He had a slight justification to be pissed. And I'm going to tell you why. Because it's part of the culture in the NBA. When I was with the Pistons now, and she was trying to sell the team, Mrs. Davidson, this is in 2009, I think. And so when they played the Nets, We didn't stay on Park Avenue, on Central Park West at the Ritz-Carlton for $700 a night for a regular room. No, she put us at the Renaissance Hotel in the wilds of Jersey, as opposed to Midtown Manhattan, where the players have got money and there's all kinds of stuff to do there. So, you know, and we were in the bus and a bunch of Piston veterans are saying, joking about it in a stage whisper about how disgusting it was that we had to stay at the Renaissance Hotel. And you know what? I was thinking the same thing.
Right, but here's the thing.
I'm thinking the same damn thing. You know what? I'd much rather be at the Ritz. I like the Ritz better. I'll go next door, eat at Mickey Mantle's restaurant. And here I am in the wilds of Northern Jersey where I grew up. I don't want to be here. So that's why, Rajon. And you got to separate
Eli,
come on now.
Eli comes down to Miami with the Pistons. And so I call him up. He calls me up, whatever it was. So we're going to get together and hang out at my apartment down in South Florida, right? I go down to pick Eli up in my car in downtown Miami. Why? Because just like the situation you mentioned, they don't want the players staying on South Beach. We talk about the South Beach syndrome in the NBA because all they want to do is go party the night before the game. They make some of these hotel decisions based upon, you know, logic.
Well, they're nice hotels, put it that way. The Renaissance is not as nice a hotel, and the players were bitching about it because they're used to more, and that's kind of part of the turf. Yes, it sounds bad in this day and age, and yes, it's another reason why players should be very careful what they say on Instagram. We saw what happened last week with who was the football player that quoted the Hitler stuff?
DeSean Jackson.
So just shut up. Just shut up on Twitter and bitch to your teammates would have been a lot better. But meanwhile, he called it a Motel 6. So what does Motel 6 do? They tweet out to him, "We'll always leave the light on for him." and a fan says, his name is A-I-Y-U-K, says, "Oh, by the way, dude clearly has never been inside of a Motel 6. In other words, the Renaissance is about 10 levels above a Motel 6.
Okay, boys. Okay, boys. Tell the truth. Tell the truth. Have you guys ever stayed in a Motel 6?
Hell yes, I haven't. Yeah,
I haven't.
On the road when you can't find
Brandon,
another hotel.
Ever stayed in a Motel 6?
I've stayed at a Motel 8.
And yeah, this Motel 6. I have a couple times, and I'll tell you why. Because I'm driving hard from South Florida, either back to New York or back to Detroit. All I want to do is a nice, clean bed to sleep in. I'm going out to dinner, and I'm going to be up, take a shower in the morning, and leave. It's pretty cheap, and it's not that bad.
I got to tell you something. I've never been in a bad one. I mean, we probably stay in a 10 or 12 a year. And, you know, we have a deal with a certain hotel chain, but when we do not get there on time, they let our room go. So we stay at the Motel 6 or Motel 8. I've never had a bad room there. I mean, every once in a while.
Is that Tom Odette? Tom Odette? We'll leave the light on for
you. Tom
right?
Odette.
Yeah, Tommy Odette.
That's a great ad campaign, isn't it?
Used to be a friend of his mother's.
So a lot of the stuff is a blatant overreaction. We've talked about that in the Indian names, the social distancing, and the rather foolish Instagram post that guys like Rajon Rondo said. But there's other guys putting stuff on Twitter that's actually pretty funny, too. The NFL protocol, this is another overreaction that people are pushing back on. So with all the spitting and pushing and sweating and all of that, the NFL included in their protocol that they were prohibiting players from exchanging jerseys as well as a ban on post-game interactions with any kind of each other within 6 feet. So New Houston, Texas wide receiver Randall Cobb tweets, "This has to be a joke." Richard Sherman says, "This is a perfect example of NFL thinking in a nutshell. Players can go engage in a full contact game, do it safely. However, this is deemed unsafe for them to exchange jerseys after the game." Taylor Henke, a quarterback, played for Old Dominion. He's not in the league anymore, goes, LOL. So the snap, the blocking, the tackling, the catching, such is allowed, but no touching after the game. And Darius Butler says, "Come on, man. I know I just tackled you 3 minutes ago, but I'm going to have to mail you my jersey." So this is the stuff. This is the overreaction. And JJ,
but if you think about this now, think about those amazing goal line stands in the NFL and in college football. You get these amazing behemoths on the offensive line, and they're breathing snot in each other's face. Is down there from 6 inches apart. How about social distancing?
Well, you're going to have a lot of that. And by the way, I was in Toledo yesterday on Sunday all day watching, I think it was Babe Ruth baseball or some kind of a league down there with 5 or 6, 7 different games going on at one time. And this is the thing that kind of surprised me. In the 5 or 6 fields where there was a game, as we're watching the ball game. We're under a tent. We've got plastic shields in front of us. A nice crowd that showed up yesterday. And here's the thing that we've talked about this a thousand times. Where are the masks? And I know Toledo doesn't have a whole lot of hell going on down there, and they're fortunate so far because they've done a good thing with your governor, I assume.
Mike DeWine. No,
very few people were wearing masks. I was, and my guy was. But what really it
well, you're outdoors.
It
That's another issue. We've beaten it to death.
And you know what? No, it's not. I was there yesterday.
It is another issue.
Drop
Danny.
Off the table for a minute.
The mask stuff is another issue. We've beaten it to death.
The mask stuff is very important, and it's got to be said every chance you get, because without it, people get sick, Bob. I know you call it a hoax. You don't think it exists.
I've never called it a hoax in my life.
Okay.
I've never called it a hoax.
You did it once.
Let's stop pointing the finger at each other. Enough of that. It's a big turnoff.
But I got to watch yesterday where the Toledo Tigers, and they won a doubleheader yesterday and took home the trophies. And those are all – remember I talk about the cops all the time in Toledo? This is their team. So,
great.
Yeah. And I've got everybody a card in case you drive through Toledo and you get stopped for speeding, Bob. Give him the card. You won't get a ticket.
I'll just tell him I work with Danny McLean on this.
You're
show.
Okay then. You're absolutely perfect. Guy.
Hey, you know, so I mentioned the behemoths in the NFL and social distancing, and Eli had mentioned that NFL training camps open as we record this Monday. July 28th, I think, is when they were supposed to open. So I'm unsure, Eli, whether they're opening today or then. But at any rate, here comes one of those behemoths, Nat Solder, the former Patriots standout offensive tackle.
Nate Solder.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, who's basically been a free agent bust with the Giants the past 2 years. So he's the Giants union rep. He has made it clear that the owners and the players' sides, they're not close to an agreement regarding these health and safety protocols.
Right.
And Solder says if the NFL doesn't do its part to keep players healthy, they're not going to be any football. He tweeted that out on Friday. It's that simple. Now, they were scheduled, the league and the players' union, to speak again today as we record this on Monday, but they still have to come to terms on all this stuff. Mm-hmm. Coronavirus testing, financial. I mean,
we'll hear what the NHL is doing. We'll talk to Kenny Holland later, but they're all trying desperately and everybody's very honest. Hey, we'll see if this works. Let's hope so. I mean, nobody is saying this is a slam dunk. From Adam Silver and Rob Manfred and Gary Bettman on down, we're going to do our best. We'll see how it goes. We're putting the protocols we can in place. A lot of people like Popovich and others say, I think we're going to be safer here than we would be in Texas, for example. So we'll have to see how it goes. And another one about the NFL protocols, you see what J.J. Watt said, that if the NFL decides to require face shields this year, he might sit out the season. He says, I don't want to put a visor on. He tried it for a few times in practice. And he says, if that's what happens, he may not come and play. So there's so much in football that's different. I want to talk about what football is.
Baseball's got the same thing. The NBA, everybody's got the same problems. And here's the biggest disaster that could occur. You know, I talked to this guy at MLB about once a week. And what he said the other day, in fact, I talked to him Saturday. He said there's only one thing that can stop them from playing, any team, the league and everybody else. He says that's if one team comes to the ballpark one day and they've got 6, 7, 8 guys. And we mentioned this once or twice, but if they got 7 or 8 guys that all of a sudden have that virus, he says, then they don't know what to do because the whole league may have to stop. So it's going to be interesting to see how quick. Yeah, by the way, I think I said this the other day, but there were 66 players who had tested positive for the virus. So let's hope not many more happen.
Yeah. I want to talk about another overreaction after we take a little break here about what Sports Illustrated is doing. Absolutely one of those headlines that blew my mind. First, I want to re-welcome again Feldman Automotive as a sponsor of our show, Michigan's number one Chevy dealer, also featuring its 1-800 pre-owned super center located in Waterford, the used car pre-owned car center in all of Michigan. Plus, they got 7 other locations, the 5 Chevy dealers in Novi, New Hudson, Lansing, Livonia, Highland. There's Feldman Hyundai of New Hudson, Feldman Key of Novi, Feldman's in Woodhaven, too. There's a Feldman dealership and a used or certified pre-owned vehicle near you. Please support Feldman. Great dealership, great family and company, and they're behind us. We hope that you will support them when it comes time to buy a new car. Almost any pre-owned car comes with exclusive drive it for 3 days. Love it or bring it back. It's a can't-lose proposition. So if you're looking for a new or pre-owned, shop Feldman. Let us know. Give us some feedback. Want you to support the show because they're supporting the show, our sponsors. 9 locations, guaranteed credit approval. You can also buy online at FeldmanAuto.com, hassle-free at home or in the showroom. Also, encourage you to look into Power Home Solar. If you've thought of any type of alternate energy, safer, clean energy, it's based right here in Detroit. Power Home Solar is America's fastest growing solar energy company. All their state-of-the-art solar panels made in America. And they're also partnering now with Generac, the nation's largest provider of in-home backup battery and generator systems. So you'll always be protected from a power outage. So lower your energy bills, eliminate power outages forever. Owner Jason Waller, Power Home Solar, financing starting at $99 a month. Call them 1-800-POWER-90 and save an additional $1,800 and support No Filter Sports. So they will continue to support us. You're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. I want to talk a little bit about college football, which I really think, and I know you guys want to get into this too, because it's such even more complex than the NFL and the NBA and pro sports with colleges spread all across the country. But first, I talked about the social messages. I see headlines that just stun me. I got to look at them and say, am I really reading this? This is the age we live in now. And when I saw the headline that Sports Illustrated,
oh my God,
is having a transgender model and she/he is gorgeous. I'm looking at the issue going, oh my God,
what do you call transgender?
He's transgender.
She's 20.
But the point is, I'm looking at it and saying, wait a minute. And I remember from the beginning, I got the Sports Illustrated was my magazine. It was great journalism, the top weekly sports publication in the world. I got it every week and couldn't wait to read everything from what happened in the Big Ten and the little small print to the feature articles to whatever. A fascinating magazine with some of the greatest sports writers of all time. And I mentioned to you guys last summer when this new Sports Illustrated, because they had time had to sell it off because it just wasn't making money anymore, to a different company. And they had half an issue on the women's soccer team. There's all these articles about Megan Rapinoe and her wife, Sue Bird, and their domestic stuff. I don't have to read that. I get a little squeamish, whatever, but that's fine. That's just me. I'm old fashioned. But now I'm looking at this saying, wait a minute. A heterosexual male is not going to look at this and say this is a little bit creepy. Now, don't get me wrong. Transgender people have been terribly discriminated against. She's a Brazilian. Her name is Valentina Sampaio. And yes, every 28 minutes or something, or every however often it is, somebody gets a trans person gets killed and murdered in Brazil. Yeah. It's terrible. I don't care what any people does in their private life. That's their business. None of mine. But I'm reading Sports Illustrated, and they got a transgender model. So I called my daughter and said, "What's wrong with me, honey? Why can't I read this? What's happened to my magazine?" She said, "Well, got to understand, Dad, you've been reading it for 50 years, and they're more willing to lose you as a reader in order to bring in a new audience, which would be women and whoever else." And I said, I get that, but I don't know. She's had a sex change operation, and so he is now a she and a beautiful one, but who is attracted to that? Who's looking at that saying, ooh, you?
No, I'm only kidding.
Oh, I don't get it.
Denny held up his hand, folks.
I was scratching my head.
So, I mean, it's okay to admit that I don't get it. I respect it. I just don't get it. And I'm wondering who's looking at this magazine and saying, whoo, yeah, I don't know.
Eli, I think you and I have a fundamental disagreement about this. I had Mark Mulvoy on my New York talk show years ago. He was publisher of Sports Illustrated. I said, Mark, I used to read your publication. And then at some point you decided that the magazine should be renamed, in my opinion. Anything that could possibly, conceivably be called a Sport Illustrated. That to me, that magazine hasn't been relevant in 100 years, except for some great writers once in a while who do really cool pieces. But the rest of it, man, I have no
idea. Wait a minute. Sports Illustrated always, they would have an article on rowing, an article on bridge. That was a very small part of the magazine. It doesn't taint it. They would also show some fashions of people wearing ski wear, but they had great writers. It was a
horse racing, you name it.
So what?
What's the matter with horse racing?
So what's with horse racing? It was the sport of kings. It was the biggest sport in America for decades. There's nothing wrong with that. They had every sport that men like. It was a men's magazine strictly.
Period.
And yep. So the fact that and the swim
not this issue, man. I don't like women's volleyball. I'm not interested in swimming. Jesus. That's what they did.
Do okay, you so like in other words, Bob? It's 90 pages, but there's just 5 pages on a subject you don't like means that's it. Done. Canceled. Over. Don't ever read
Denny
magazine
hates
again.
Sports. Denny hates Bob. Sports Illustrated.
Bob. Another great reason. Magazine. There, come on now.
One other thing. When the magazine comes out with all the models, wherever they go in the world, do you look at the pictures and say, hi, how are you?
Yes, of course you do.
Man, in the age of porn on the internet, okay, those girls don't even show anything.
Listen,
what do you want to see, Bob?
So let's not get into that, guys.
Let's not get into that.
Come on, guys, stop.
Come on, we don't have anything to stop about.
The thing is, they still have some great writers. Tom Verducci writes on baseball terrifically.
Yeah, sure.
They got Michael Rosenberg, the former guy from the Free Press. They still do some decent stuff. Of course, there's no sports these days, so they've been struggling there. But I just... The transgender model to me was just, that's okay. It's your magazine. Do what you want. I just didn't.
I don't think I'm going to be looking at that.
That was appealing
but,
to.
But you know what? It appears you're the only one it bothers.
It bothers what? I don't know.
Do you think
I
mean, I'm the only
doesn't bother what? Me. I don't think it bothers
It bothers
Bob.
Eli. It bothers me. We're the only ones it bothers.
I mean, it's a non sequitur. Why is she there or he there with these other models when it's a completely different genre? So my daughter said to me, well, you know, Dad, if you didn't know that she had been a man, you'd think she was pretty hot. I go, yeah, but I'd find out soon enough and be terribly disappointed. anyway,
let's switch to a topic you guys want to discuss because you both are very good on it. And you both are, you really both are experts on this. Who said this? They made a big mistake on my odds from the world of golf. And so he went after opening at 30-1 to win the tournament last weekend. And he made a big bet on himself to win the event. Who said that?
The kid that won it?
John Smoltz.
Oh, Smoltz.
It's the American Century Championship, this celebrity thing. So Smoltzy teed off in the tourney. How about this for a threesome Friday afternoon? Smoltzy, Roger Clemens, and Greg Maddux teed off together. Okay. And Smoltz was really pissed. I mean, you know, Tiger has said he's the best non-PGA tour player he's ever played with in his life.
Because he never saw me play.
I'm sure you were a great player years ago. So Smoltzy goes in the tournament and he doesn't win. I just checked it out. He finished third. Do you guys know who Marty Fish is?
Yeah. Isn't he a tennis player?
Yeah, he is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. A double specialist.
Yeah.
Marty Fish wins this tournament.
Oh my goodness.
Finishing second is Kyle Williams. Do you remember him? Brandon Wood.
No.
Long time standout defensive tackle, believe it or not, on the Buffalo Bills. No. Smoltz finishes third over the weekend. And the fourth guy, they say he's a great player. Steph Curry finished fourth in the
tournament. Oh, yeah, he's a great player. Yeah. He's been on a tournament.
They did. I saw an interview today. I think it was on a Today Show. They were talking to Curry about what kind of a golfer he is. And, man, I'm telling you, you know, he's one of those guys.
He played in the PGA tournament last summer, the summer before. Yep.
He's really good.
But he's
Did you watch the PGA Tour stop over the weekend at the Memorial?
I saw the end
the
of
Memorial,
it yesterday.
Of course.
I saw the sudden death where these two, but Morikawa and Justin Thompson, Thomas sunk 80 feet worth of putts on the first playoff hole. It was astounding. And Morikawa was interesting also because there was an article I read where you know, talking about how golfers have these putts at the end of tournaments, and the difference between finishing fifth or tied for fourth can be $250,000. As Murakawa had lost $500,000 by missing a 4-foot putt in a tournament a couple of weeks ago. Yeah. Nice to see him come back and win. But speaking of gambling, because you mentioned...
ever heard of this guy before the tournament, Eli?
Of course.
The Japanese-American?
Yeah,
because
he won one last year. He won one last year.
Okay, I hadn't. And I watched some of it, too. And one of the first names I saw on the leaderboard was Chase, and I didn't know how to pronounce his last name. And they said, Chase Seifert. Okay. I guess I obviously must be a hell of a young player. So he didn't win it, but he was in contention the whole way. And I swear to you, 2 minutes later, he made a good shot. Nance is doing the broadcast. He says, oh, that was a hell of a shot by Chase Seifert. These guys are so unknown to the average sports fan. Even Nance, even they don't know how to pronounce their names.
I'm surprised.
But Bob, there's so many, Bob, what you don't understand, there's so many of them out there. There's 10 money tours a week around the country somewhere. And there are exceptional players in every one of these tours. And it's unbelievable. And it takes a lot of work to get to the big guys. A lot of work.
Yeah, you got guys who'll be on the Corn Ferry 1 week. They'll get enough points. They'll move up to the PGA
Tour. That's exactly right. It's incredible.
So many guys on the bubble, and a lot of them got, you know, cost like $3,000 a week travel expenses. You got to pay your caddy and all that. A lot of guys aren't making money. But here's another one, since you mentioned the gambling thing. Here's another headline, like the social messages, like whatever the thing I just mentioned about the swimsuit model. No more ping pong gambling.
I got that story too.
Jersey.
I had it to go.
And this shows this is the Department of Desperate, Degenerate Gambling, where with no sports, there's been huge money put on Ukrainian ping pong, and now it's being pulled off because of potential game fixing
fraud.
But isn't this something? I mean,
I read that story, and my first thought after reading that story was, I wonder if Denny lost any money on that.
No, but I will tell you this: Denny's very anxious to see the NFL come back.
But you know, but imagine you're a degenerate, or you're, I don't want to say degenerate, but you're a gambler. So you got to study the Ukrainian players, and now these are the certain ones that they're not taking any money on. I mean, you can't even pronounce the names, but who knows?
Because I'm taking as soon as I go down for the first time into the gambling parlor at one of the casinos, I'm taking Eli with me.
And I'll sit.
He's got all the money.
And you don't drink. I do. I'll sit at the bar.
Okay, that's good. It's a nice bar. Yeah.
So, you know, again, it's just one of the things that happens, folks. We're sorry and we can't help it, but we have to record these programs. And sometimes really important stuff happens, like the moment we're done. So on Thursday, right after we finished the show, the Big Ten came forward, or as I call it, the Big 13 plus Rutgers, and they announced that they were changing all their football schedules this year. Yeah. They were not going to play any non-conference games, which pissed me off because Michigan State was supposed to play Miami of Florida this year. I was really looking forward to that. They're only playing conference games. And so I just thinking to myself, you know, Central Michigan is going to lose $10.5 million from this deal. And the MAC schools are going to, Bowling Green's going to lose a ton of money from not playing games against Big Ten teams. Are you telling me that you can fly your team from Ann Arbor to Lincoln, Nebraska, to play Nebraska, but you can't have Central Michigan or Western or Eastern drive over to play in the Big House? What is the purpose of this?
But it's not the same conference. I mean, they're trying to make
it. But why can't you still play Central, Eastern, or Western?
Well, that's a good point.
Costing those universities millions.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, well, all you know, it's funny. One university or one league does something, everybody follows. When the Ivy League shut down X-10 sports
followed,
last week,
mm-hmm.
This guy, the director, the Columbia Athletic Director, Peter Pilling, said the Ivy League will shut down sports. Nobody wants to be the first one, but when somebody is, then it makes it okay for somebody to be the next one. And sure enough, here we go. The Big Ten decides we're not only going to play home games. But, you know, it was only to protect, because each conference is in its own – it's in its own separate situation. They could shut down teams or shut down the conference or whatever. And so you're best just not overlapping. So it was done as just another preventive measure against to hopefully get a season in.
I understand that. How come they can't play Central, Eastern, and Western? Bus ride,
I don't know.
40 minutes, I don't know. An hour, whatever it is.
Maybe they're trying to shorten the number of games so they can hopefully get
true. Aren't they going to substitute it? Aren't they just, Big Ten has so many members now, aren't they just going to play the same schedule but just substitute Big Ten teams they wouldn't have played?
Right, probably that's what they're doing. Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. And really, do we really need to play Northern Arkansas and Central Michigan and Southern Alabama?
I'm with you on that.
And Appalachian State. Those are all BS games anyway. They charge full price for. So,
and as we all know, Eli, your beloved alma mater wants no part of that action. Appalachian State. Yeah. No way would Michigan ever play them again.
Well, it always gets me upset when I see Michigan playing St. Mary's of Nevada or St. Mary's of this, and MSU doing the same thing. It just doesn't make sense. I mean, why do you want to run up 50 points on teams you know you're going to kill? And hurt, by the way.
Yeah, I know. It's just a guaranteed win. It's so important in the FBS or whatever it is, standings, whatever they're calling it this year, standings, that you finish the season at 12-0 because somebody else is going to do it. And if somehow you should lose or whatever, man, your national championship hopes are done in September.
We don't even know if there's going to be students in East Lansing or in Ann Arbor.
They are. They've announced that they're coming.
No,
they
back. Yeah, but how many days yeah. a week, and how much online, and how do you keep people safe? Athletics, man, it's just an add-on that just complicates everything. It's just a jumble. I mean, the budget.
Well, right now, even a conversation with all of these surges going on is kind of a dead conversation. I mean, you can't plan for anything right now.
Yeah. Here's another announcement.
People in the stands.
Speaking of college sports, as we are, there's another announcement that, again, folks, we tape the show and then things happen after that. I mentioned on the Tom Izzo show we did last Thursday that the next day, Friday, could be another big one for Michigan State basketball, because Kobe Bufkin, four-star great guard from Grand Rapids Christian, was going to announce his commitment to either Michigan State or to Michigan. Well, guess what? Juwan Howard won out. So this kid is ranked the best player in the state of Michigan for the 2021 class by some people, while others say Detroit Frederick Douglass guard Pierre Brooks II, who is going to Michigan State, is the top player. There's another kid at Farmington named Jaden Atkins. But, you know, I love this, the fact that he went to Michigan, because this is what it should be. Michigan State in tremendous competition. Juwan versus Tom. And it hasn't been much of a competition the last few years. And now, thanks to Juwan Howard, it is again. And I think it's great.
Yeah, I got two quick things on the Tigers. Zimmerman, he went out yesterday and got his head knocked back again. And they say he's 110% perfect again. He's got no injuries, no pain, no nothing. And he goes out and never got out of either the first or second inning. They just whacked him. And this is one thing I got to say about him. He's got $8 million more that he makes, and then he's done here. The thing about it, they're talking about letting him pitch in a rotation. If you let him pitch in a rotation, you're not even serious about being a contender. You've only got 60 games to worry about, and you're worried about pitching this guy. And he's a good guy, by the way. I mean, terrific guy.
I hear that too. He's not a major league pitcher.
Sooner or later, you run out of your major league stripes, and you got to go somewhere else. And then the other story that got my attention is they wrote a front page of the sports page the other day on my striking out Cabrera. Excuse me, you mean to tell me that's how bad the news is now? He strikes them out and that's it?
What would have happened if they wrote
about all the strikeouts at Lolich and all the guys on our club had? Hell, we struck out Mickey Mantle and Maris
and Jim Miguel Cabrera never strikes out, did he?
He does. He has his share. And even if he hits the ball, he doesn't run, so it doesn't make any difference.
It's spring training. Do you remember we've told this before, I think, but Jeff Mortimer wrote for the Ann Arbor News.
I loved Jeff Mortimer. What a classic
I'm with him at spring. First time you get to spring training, probably in the late 70s. And he's so excited the first day. Man, I'm here. I'm a Joker March. And look at the crack of the bat and the smell of the leather and the pine tar and all that. This is about 7 days in. He looks at me and says, What's my headline today? Nothing happened at spring training again today. Nothing happens. All right, it's programmed for nothing to happen. They're not playing real games right now, right. And the Tigers are a 500-1 shot, which means they have no chance. Their predicted win total is 21. They're going to finish 21-39 according to most predictions. So that's the only news there was. Don't blame the sports writers. They're supposed to have a story every day. This is tough. So it's typical spring training.
And by the way, Norris, who's coming off of the list of the injured in 10 days, you know, he's still getting over the virus. So we don't even know if he'll really be off of it in 10 days.
Luke Nowacki for 20 years has worked with individuals, families, business owners. And didn't he say on this show, we had him on a couple of months ago, he says, now's a great time to buy. What if the market down 20% of the time? If you'd listened to Luke Nowacki, if you'd gone to see him.
But that's a great point. I haven't thought about
that. And you'd taken a suggestion, you'd be 20% ahead right now. So the point is, you need a guy with experience who knows the game, who's been in it for as long as he has. And that's where you should check out Luke at Pinnacle Wealth Strategies, 248-663-4748. You don't have the time to spend on portfolios and to read what's happening in all the markets and to cover it all. Let him do it. He does it every day. And it'll create a plan to help you reach your financial goals, answer all your questions, and tell you, should I be investing in right now? Should I be pulling out right now? What should I do? What's best so I can protect my family and make sure that I have a good retirement and I can afford my kids' weddings? So check it out. 248-663-4748. Luke Nowacki he's our guy. We support him, and you should too. Advisory services offered through Royal Alliance Associates, Inc. Other marketing names, products, services, to your independent Royal Alliance Associates. And also, this is a great time to refinance. And David Hall and Hall Financial cares about you and this chance to help you save some money. So it's a great time to look at your options, and that's why so many people are refinancing these days. And if you haven't in the last year, you can lower your monthly payments and maybe skip a couple of payments or two as we go through these turbulent times. If you're worried about coronavirus, of course, don't. He'll appraise your house without stepping foot inside. Their service, Hall's Financial, is the fastest in the business. They have nearly 1,500 five-star reviews for Michigan homeowners. So go to Hall Financial, go to the webpage, or get started by simply calling 248-308-5000. Hall Financial, lower payments, better options, more personal attention. You're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast.
Can I do my Tiger story now? Because I really want to do this, and Denny mentioned the Tigers. Look, I know a lot of you younger listeners are not going to understand who I'm talking about, but all you older guys out there know who I'm talking about, and that is Frank Bowling. One of the heroes of my childhood, two-time All-Star second baseman. If you really want to know, also the last player to ever hit a grand slam off Sandy Koufax. Frank passed away from cancer over the weekend. He's had it for the last 5 years, and he fought it. Played 6 years with the Tigers. His Gold Glove Award in 58 was the first ever by a Tigers infielder. Part of that season, his double play partner was his older brother, shortstop Milt Bowling. Alabama boys. I always wanted to meet Frank. And I always wanted to meet another boyhood hero of mine, Tigers great Frank Larry, especially to find out how those guys felt in the 1950s about playing with and against black players. Denny, did you know Frank Bowling?
I didn't know Bowling, but I played with Frank Larry for about
two months.
Frank was one of the funniest people you'd ever meet in your life.
Uh-huh.
He became sheriff for 25 years down there at one time. He was the sheriff. But the thing, he did something so spectacular on the day they released him. He had pitched the first inning or two. They took him out of the game because he got hit up a little bit. He went into the clubhouse. He took a shower, had his bags already in the clubhouse for some reason, because I think we were going on the road that night. And so he comes back into the dugout in about the fifth or sixth inning. He's got his bag. He says, everybody, folks, I'll see you again one day down the road when you come to Alabama, and don't be speeding, because one day I'm going to be the sheriff and I will arrest all your asses. So the next thing that I
That's
know,
not a bad Southern accent either.
So Frank jumps up on those three stairs and walks right through the middle of the infield with his bag while the game is going on. Right.
No.
It was a class act like I will never forget. Right. Just took
his nickname was
right out the first base dugout.
Frank Larry's nickname?
Taters.
Nope.
Taters. Or the Yankee Killer.
The Yankee Killer.
Yeah. His nickname was Taters also.
Yeah. He was 128 and 116.
Oh, yeah.
He's been dead, by the way. If he died in 2017, he would have been 90 where he's
still
alive.
Yeah, he lived a long time. Did you know Frank Bowling was traded for, by the way? Another one of my baseball card heroes. And one of the finest men I ever knew, and I knew him well. He was traded to the Milwaukee Braves for Billy Bruton. When his career was over, Billy stayed in Detroit and became a high-ranking Chrysler executive.
And
really,
by
such
the way,
a great guy. Terry Fox was involved. Coot Veal, I think, was involved.
By the way, with Billy Bruton. Billy Bruton, he and I hit back-to-back home runs together. The only one I ever hit.
The only one you ever hit, I was going to say,
He hit about 300 of them, but I hit one, and he and I did them back-to-back.
Did you mention Coot Veal? Did you just mention Coot Veal, or did that go off?
Coot Veal,
I was thinking.
Trade, too, and maybe a couple other guys, I think.
Because Mets began in 1962, and they had Charlie Neal, the ex-Dodger, and they had Rod Kenneal, who was kind of a never went anywhere. And so he said, well, you got to trade for Coot Veal. So you have a double play combination, Veal to Neal to Kenneal, but they never did succeed in getting
that's pretty funny. And Coot Veal's real name was?
I don't know.
Inman Veal.
By the way, Bowling was a two-time All-Star and was the first Tiger infielder to win.
I just said
gold
that.
Did you say that back in 50? Okay, back in 50.
Will you listen to me, please?
Did you mention the shortstop was his brother Milt for Tigers?
Yes, yeah, Eli. Yeah. You're not listening to me. Your head's in the ozone somewhere.
And we mentioned that Babe Ruth hit 700 home runs.
Write that down, Brandon. You can take that out.
Right. No, leave it in, Brandon. I want people to know about this. Leave it in,
Brandon.
So anyway, there's a great pick in the Detroit Free Press this morning. I hope you saw this. Go check it out. Of a very young Al Kaline, Frank Bowling, Norm Cash, and a fourth Detroit Tiger sitting in the locker room. Now, that fourth one may have been a mystery to some of you younger people, but not to we now old Tigers fans. I was walking down the street with my dad near his office downtown one day. Two men approached us. Dad stopped to say hello and said, Bobby, do you recognize these men? I looked at them and exclaimed, that's Neil Chrisley. I did not recognize the other guy. It was Norm Cash, who had just joined the Tigers. And all four guys in that great Free Press picture are now dead. All gone.
Well, let's get to the mailbag. I forgot to do, I must admit, and I'm sure you guys are terribly disappointed, I forgot to do this day in sports, but I tell you what was funny.
You got it or not? You got it
no,
right
I don't.
Or not.
I didn't
we
do
don't it. Really need it today. Today's Monday.
But check it out, though.
Okay, you know what? Then I'm going to switch my order in the mailbag here since you don't have that today. And I know I've got it here. Okay. Here it is right here. I'm going to lead with this instead. And you can tweet us at Eli Zarrett, at MU2Denny, or at Bob Page Sports. You can write us, asknofilter@gmail.com. And you can call us, 760-89-BALLS. So here is again. See what you started, Eli, with this day in sports? Here is again Dominic Vitale, Dick's nephew. He thinks he's going to do a regular feature too. And you know what the feature's going to be called?
What we did last year on this day.
This day in no filter sports podcast. July 8th, he writes, Dickie V was interviewed. Maybe the best interview you've ever had on this show till this day. Well, that's nice.
Yeah.
But then he went back and he broke down the highlights of the next three shows we did too. And remember this one? I know all of you do. On July 11th, Denny tells the story having to take his pants off in front of a gay doctor due to an arm injury.
He was going to give me a cortisone shot.
That's right. Said, get your pants off.
As soon as I got them pants down just below my hips, I'm thinking, where is he going to put that injection?
So Drew Lane came into the studio and he joined us that day. It was a lot of fun. He's never been back. He'd welcome any time, obviously. So he asks, what is snobbier? The Masters or Wimbledon? Eli naturally says the Masters is snobbier. I naturally say Wimbledon is snobbier. And then Denny guaranteed folks like Joe Namath in the Super Bowl that Matthew Boyd will not be a Tiger any longer. He will be traded as soon as possible. How'd that work out, Denny?
It's working out because he's not pitching.
All right. Okay. But you know what? I thank you, Dominic. I love the stuff people tweet us. I had meant to get this on last week, but we just ran out of time. This to me, I can't recall who actually tweeted it, but this provides folks, you got to see this, a link to the now legendary Dick Cavett show, which everybody watched back in the day.
Great
now,
guy.
You can get this show on a site called ShoutFactoryTV.com. You must go there and see this from August of 1970. When the Tigers were in New York to play the Yankees, the announcer starts off on the show with, "It's the Dick Cavett Show with baseball star Denny McClain."
Oh, no.
So the Denny McClain who came on with Dick Cavett was somebody I never met and I do not know. God, you were so young, handsome in a suit and tie. You were almost laid back, almost quiet and self-effacing, but you were funny as hell as always. Cavett immediately got into your suspension from baseball. You mispronounced Bowie Kuhn's name, calling him Bowie Kuhn, and you did that twice. Among many interesting things you said, Denny, about your suspension, which ended that year, is you blamed a lot of people in the media. And I'm quoting you now, Denny. I wrote it down from the show. I thought Detroit sports writers were smarter than they are. They're not. They're dumb. I don't know how many of you have ever been to Detroit, Michigan, but it's a major league town all the way when it comes to sports. They just have minor league writers. Cavett then tells you, Denny, you know, Bill Freehan wrote an article about you in Sports Illustrated that was very unflattering. Denny then invented a nickname for Freehan, and when he came back to the Tigers, he greeted Bill for the first time in the locker room with his nickname. Remember what that nickname was?
No, I don't.
Ernie. Why did you call Bill Freehan Ernie? Because you accused him of being like Ernest Hemingway. Now he thinks he's a writer instead of a baseball player for writing that stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, folks, Dick Cavett was such a wimpy guy. He knows nothing about baseball. You got to see this show with Danny McClain and Dick. Very, very funny stuff. It really was good stuff. All right, let's continue with the mailbag here. And, of course, we had a lot of comments about Tom Izzo. Brian Fusen writes, or he tweets, I should say, without a doubt, my favorite interview you guys have done so far. This is the most comfortable I have ever heard Tom Izzo. The bar just keeps getting raised on excellence on your show. Bravo, Bob, Eli, and Denny. Oh, nice. Now, you know, our big fan, Robbie Silverman out in Phoenix, retweeted the Izzo show link to some very famous, important people and entities for us. I not only thanked Robbie, I hope you guys don't mind that I did this, I also offered him a job. I wanted him to be our publicist. I said we could pay him $1.25 an hour plus tips. That's all we have right now. So Robbie replies, no, I want to thank you guys, along with many other people joining me, for making a couple days a week go by a little faster during these times. Working from home is like being locked up. I know all of you are not doing this to shore up your finances. It is much appreciated. Kurt Kosmowski wrote, the Izzo interview was your best ever, guys. Thanks so much. David Foster, one of our listeners, he's an attorney in Indianapolis, a Detroit native. So he writes to us and said, Eli said it was fine that Bryson DeChambeau blew up after a bad shot, because so does Eli as a 12 handicap player. In reality, nobody cared that he freaked out after that bad shot. The issue was that he berated a cameraman for just doing his job. So, and you guys follow this stuff closely. Bush, I don't. League. I didn't know this. Golf Week's Eamon, am I right? Eamon Lynch may have summed it up best with this quote, quote, credit DeChambeau's optimism in thinking that being shown acting like a jerk would hurt his image rather than merely solidify it. So this guy is not a good guy.
By the way, we have to say goodbye to our radio audience right here.
Oh, okay, we got
our,
more than
a rapidly dwindling radio audience in WCWA in Toledo. Thanks for listening. We're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast.
So he's a bad guy then?
I don't know, Bryson.
I just think he's quick-tempered. That's all. He looks like he really gets rattled when he hits a bad shot, and that won't last him very long. Not out there.
All I know is that a lot of players have complained at how slow he plays.
He's too deliberate. Terrible.
There was one tournament where he was playing slowly, and then he walked 75 yards from where his shot was, which is kind of off the fairway a little bit, and walked all the way back, which took him about 3 minutes. And so he's been, people have been bitching about that. But watching him fascinating.
Here's an interesting question I want to ask Danny about. Ready, Danny? This is tweeted to me courtesy of a woman named Bridget Mulcahy, who's a big Billy Martin fan. She said, manager arguments or temper tantrums of the kind thrown by jerks like Martin and Weaver are about lighting a fire under your team. Martin was able to foster an us against them attitude. He felt if the team was aggressive and pushed the envelope, they'd succeed. He was nothing if not audacious, whether it be with his own players, opposing team, or umpire. So, Denny, when one of your managers came out and went crazy over an umpire's call, did that actually light a fire under you guys, or were you perhaps a little embarrassed for your skipper?
Not hardly. I mean, you just you had to stand there and listen to it, and then you try to calm the manager down, as like Mayo Smith. I mean, Mayo would come out and just give an umpire hell. At times, he didn't even know why he was doing it, other than to try to stimulate somebody, but it doesn't work. Listen, you got enough to worry about out there.
Yeah.
Excuse me. It got enough to worry about out there to have to worry about what the manager or the coaches are going to say. Too much going on.
It's the same as bulletin board material,
Yeah, it is. It really
okay,
is.
Bob, let's wrap it up, okay? Last one.
I got one from your buddy Elliot Lerner. That's number two on my list here. Can we do that? I got to tell Elliot to
last
wait. There's
one.
A lot
Go
of
ahead.
Good stuff here.
Go ahead.
Listen to this question. This is from John Pertell of St. Paul, Minnesota, for Danny. Danny, I need to know if Fred Stanley, remember Chicken Stanley? Fred Stanley's home run off you in 1971 at RFK Stadium was hit left-handed or right, because he's listed by some sources as switch hitting. I play Stratomatic Baseball Simulation.
Oh,
and Denny, I need to know if I can classify 1971 Fred Stanley as a switch hitter for
the
Cleveland.
Ultimate in geekdom right there, playing Stratomatic Baseball.
Can I tell you what I remember about that?
Yeah, go ahead. That's what he wants to know.
Nothing.
and on that note, well, I think we should get to our special guest. Let's get to our special guest, okay? Let's do that. Yeah. New Edmonton Oilers general manager Ken Holland was a Red Wings player, scout, assistant GM, GM, and executive vice president for 36 years, from 83 to 2019. Will be inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame this November, COVID permitting, of course. In 08, he was at Mellon Arena in Pittsburgh. His team ahead 3-2 and leading 3-2 in the final frantic seconds of Game 6 of the Stanley Cup Final.
Seconds to go. Gonchar flipped one. It's off the glove of Lindstrom. Sent back out to center ice off Cleary. Gonchar turns it around. It is brought right back in. A little pass to the front backhand. And Sabon's got it! And that's it! The Detroit Red Wings, for the fourth time in 11 years, are the Stanley Cup champions.
What an amazing finish that was. And the native of Vernon, British Columbia, back home in Canada, Kenny joins us from the banks of the North Saskatchewan River in beautiful Alberta. Season starting today. Kenny, how goes it? Great to have you join us.
Good. Nice to be with you guys. Yeah, today's day one of training camp, so we're excited. The schedule came out the other day. August the 1st is our first game, playoff game, play-in game against Chicago. So everybody's excited up here.
Boy, that's quick. August, guys, start today, August 1st, game. Boy, it's going to be exciting for everybody, especially in Edmonton. Give us kind of an idea, and this is a little two-parter, what the conditions are in Edmonton, because apparently they're just playing in Edmonton and Toronto. And what is it going to be like for the players not leaving the cities that they're being assigned to? And apparently no quarantine.
Well, right now, I would say to you, things are in Edmonton regarding to COVID. It's pretty good. There's some cases, but not a lot. And obviously, Edmonton is one of the hubs. There's two hubs, one in Toronto, one in Edmonton. We're going to host the Western Conference, 12 teams. I think there's about three or four hotels that are part of the bubble. And there's six teams at the JW Marriott across the street. And then about a block away, there's another hotel. Six teams will be there. And then there's a league hotel for referees. And on the 26th of July, everybody will come into Edmonton, all the teams. They'll enter the bubble, and then you cannot leave the bubble. You have to stay inside these defined areas. And only people that are allowed into this area are going to get access. So nobody can get in and nobody can get out. Obviously, they've done some work on that. You have to feed the players and some of these things. And I know that the league is working with the PA and our people here with the Oilers to nail all that down. So it's going to be I think it's going to be very safe. And I think if we can get into the bubble, I think we'll have a chance to declare Stanley Cup champion at the end of the year.
And nobody around the National League is bitching about the Leafs or you guys having a home ice advantage, because you ain't going to have one. You're playing in empty arenas with no fans. I mean, how bizarre is this going to be? And should the NHL even be doing this?
Well, first off, it's going to be totally strange. I think obviously anytime you're playing professional sports, you're used to big crowds and the emotion of the fans. So it's going to be totally strange for everybody. I know that the league is working on some things to pump in some music and to create an environment, you know, for the people at home to have an atmosphere or have a feeling of an atmosphere that there's fans in the building. And I would say to you, you know, should we do it? I think obviously the NHLPA, the union, and the league have worked very hard together. But as part of this, they found a 4-year extension to a collective bargaining agreement.
Great.
And I think that obviously it's we'd love to find a way to get our business back up and running. And you know, obviously it's a made for TV event. Certainly all these other sports, baseball and basketball and the PGA Tour are doing a similar thing. So we're optimistic that with this bubble idea that we've created and only two hubs that we're going to have a real good chance to have it, like I said, to the conclusion and have a Stanley Cup champion at the end of September.
Well, the COVID thing is not going anywhere. So you've just lost former Red Wing Mike Green, once was one of the top defensemen in the entire NHL. I mean, this has got to hurt your club's chances, and who knows who's going to be next to drop out of the competition.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. But I think I was fortunate in Detroit to be, you know, on teams that went on long playoff runs. I think we went to the final six times. You need lots of players. If you're going to go on a, you know, it's certainly people opting out. I think four or five players have opted out around the league to this point in time, and the deadline's later this afternoon. So it doesn't appear that many players have opted out. Certainly Mike Green's going to be a loss. I traded a fourth round draft pick at the deadline to Detroit to acquire him. But, you know, it's like, I guess I'm looking at, it's like injuries. You know, you're going along, you get injuries, and somebody else has got to step in and pick up the slack. And we're going to need more than 20 players. We're going to need 25, 26, 27 players. If you're going to play 2.5 months and play every second day for 2.5 months, you're going to need a depth of players. And certainly losing Green is a big loss, but we've got to find a way to, someone's got to step in and fill the hole.
Kenny, you know, if there is a fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth man who winds up with virus, you know, five guys or six guys or seven guys or eight guys, all of a sudden, does the league have a plan in place to handle that? Major League Baseball, the NFL, and NBA, they have not published anything to say if five or six guys all of a sudden come down with the virus and how it affects the game. Has the NHL laid out anything yet?
Well, we had a general manager's call a couple of days ago, Saturday morning, and they did talk about that with us. If there's isolated cases, and we get those, there's going to be testing every day. There's sure. going to be temperature checks every day. So before you start your day, we're going to find out the testing from the day before. You're going to have a temperature check. So we're number one. If COVID does get in and somebody gets it, we're optimistic that we're going to be able to get that person out of circulation, get him into quarantine, and then they're going to do some contact tracing. So certainly if there's some isolated cases, we will be able to continue on. Certainly if there's, you use the word an outbreak, then at that point in time, obviously the union and the NHL and infectious disease doctors and all the health agencies will have to make a determination as to how we go. But our hope, our plan is that first off, there's no COVID, but if it does get in, that we'll be able to catch it early and get the person out of circulation and we'll only have some isolated cases.
This is going to play out however it does. We're all waiting to see, and nobody really has any answers now, but it sounds like the league has done all it can, as the other leagues have, to just say, well, let's give it a shot. We have no choice. We want to talk about your whole career here in Detroit.
But Eli, if I can just follow up with you on what you're saying. I mean, everybody's talking about social distancing. How the hell are you going to play hockey games with social distancing? And guys are going to be dropping the gloves, and there's going to be blood out there. What are you going to do?
Well, I think Bob, like the games start on about the tournament starts August the 1st. We all have to be in the hub on the 26th of July, and all these teams that are in their own cities are getting checked. I just came in today and I got a throat swab, so I'm getting checked every 2 days, minimum every 2 days, and in some situations, depending on access to testing, some teams are going to test every day. Everybody, we're asking our players to just go between home and the arena, and then as we work our way towards July 26th, and these teams jump on the plane, the plan would be that they're jumping on the plane, that they're COVID free, they land here, we put them into the bubble, and if you can get them into the bubble, a week before, and then they're going to be tested that week before. The plan would be obviously that you're getting into that bubble and you've got without COVID, and now you can keep it outside, and then they're going to be very strict as to how they handle the food and how we do things. So I think they've done a tremendous job in having a plan. Hopefully the plan works.
As I said, we want to talk about your whole career, and this will play out. These are all questions that you've tried to answer, and we'll see how it goes. We don't know, but that's part of the great curiosity factor. But one problem the Red Wings don't have is they're not in the playoffs. They're not one of the 24 teams. You are one of them. And when I look back, Kenny, come on, this is in April of just last year when Yzerman came in, and you then moved quickly on to Edmonton. You got to feel good of the fact that this has been an amazing year for you. You're with a team that's in the playoffs, that has two of the great players in the game, if not the greatest, in Connor McDavid. Fascinating year, and you get elected to the Hockey Hall of Fame. So you've really landed very nicely on your feet, have you not?
Yeah, it's been a tremendous year. Certainly, after making the playoffs for 25 straight years in Detroit and most of those years being a legitimate cup contender and winning, we won four championships. I was assistant manager for one of them and manager as three. The last 3 years we missed the playoffs, and it became apparent to me that we needed to go into rebuild mode, and they traded away Thomas. I traded away players that were 26, 27, 28, that they were NHL players. Gustav Nyquist for two picks and Thomas Tatar for three picks. And we were starting to trade away players for picks and we were building for the future. Well, you can't put picks on the ice. The picks are for the future. So, it was a tough year with the Red Wings this year. I think it was, I don't know if it was expected. I think that they were going to have a tough year. They're going into rebuild mode. I was a Red Wing for 36 years. So obviously I watched them very close. Red Wings are going to be a big part of my life. They have been and will be till the day I'm gone. And certainly leaving Detroit and getting an opportunity to come to Edmonton, when Bob Nicholson, the president, and Daryl Cates, the owner, talked to me I felt that I had, I'm 64 years old. I felt that I still had a lot of passion, a lot of energy. And I wanted another opportunity to try to make some noise. And I, you know, part of having a chance to win a championship is having star power. And certainly I knew coming here to Edmonton with McDavid and Dreisaitl that they had star power. So, I'm excited about the opportunity. The coach here, Dave Tippett, did a tremendous job from day one of training camp of getting our players to kind of buy in to being a team, and they dug in, they competed, and I thought we were happy where we were at. 71 games when the pause hit, and we're now excited here for this opportunity in the Stanley Cup tournament that we've created.
Kenny, something about Steve. Steve is here, of course. He's the big boss here now. He had a nice run in Tampa, certainly, to say the least. I've never figured it out. Maybe there's just a straight Denny McLain. What's the matter with you? You're not listening. Why did you leave Detroit? Why did you leave Steve? I would have thought you two guys would have been the double tango of all time in this town for hockey.
Well, that's a great question. You know, when Steve stepped down, you know, in my last year as a manager of Detroit, Steve stepped down. It was around late August, early September in Tampa Bay. And some, you know, we got off to it became apparent in November, December. I think we were about 10 points out, and it looked like we were going to miss the playoffs for a third consecutive year. I talked to Chris Ilitch, and I thought it would be fabulous for our franchise and for me and for everybody to bring Steve back. We asked for permission to talk to Steve in I think about March, you know, about a month before the season ended. And then when Steve came, Chris Ilitch and Miss Ilitch made an incredible offer to me, a 3-year offer to stay and be the senior vice president of the Red Wings. And I talked to Steve. Steve was all in. I love being a Red Wing. And then we went to the World Under 18 Championships in Sweden right after that press conference. And it's the draft eligible. It's all the kids were Canada, U.S., Sweden, Finland, Russia, Czech Republic. And I'm looking at the players, and I knew it had to be Steve's team. Steve has done an unreal job in 9 years in Tampa Bay and building them up from a team at the bottom into a legit Stanley Cup contender. He's one of the top general managers in the National Hockey League. I've got an unbelievable respect for him as a player, as a person, as a friend, and as an NHL general manager. And I knew it had to be Steve's team. I had to step back, and it had to be Steve's team. I couldn't be hovering around, and I didn't want to be hovering around. Steve would let me, but I just felt that it needed to be his team. And then shortly thereafter, we were in Europe. The phone rang. It was Bob Nicholson offering me, after some conversations, offered me a 5-year job contract to become the manager in Edmonton. And I felt that it was an opportunity, I guess, for me here in Edmonton to continue to be the manager, to come manage Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl. It was a Canadian marketplace. I'm a Western Canadian boy. We have a daughter that lives in Calgary for personal reasons. We have a house in Vernon, British Columbia. For personal reasons, it was good. And for professional reasons, I was going to continue to be a manager with two young stars. Connor's 23, Leon's 24. And it's an opportunity to try to make a little bit more noise near the end of my managing career.
Kenny, here's a typical headline in sports from the year 2005. It comes from Yahoo. Quote, Wings GM in a league of his own. In fact, I told you here in Florida after a Panthers game a few years ago that you might be the best GM in all four North American sports. Yet all this negativity from some Wings fans. Kenny Holland was overrated. Scout Håkan Andersson got all those great European players like Lidstrom, Zetterberg. And then look at what Holland did. He gave those contracts to Justin Abdelkader and Stevie Weiss. Are you resentful of this what have you done for me lately philosophy here in Detroit?
Well, I think Bob, that's the business that we're in. Where it's certainly you talked about 05. I think in 2010, you know, the hockey news put out the all decade team, and we had won the cup obviously in 02, and we won the cup in 08, and I was general manager of the all decade team. And by 2018, I was probably maybe the manager of the all stupid team. That's the way sports is. So I understand the business that I'm in. I I I I understand, you know, we didn't win a playoff round. I think we won one playoff round the last seven years or so that I was a general manager. And we set the bar high in Detroit. We had incredible ownership in Mr. and Mrs. Ilitch. The building was full. We have a passionate fan. There's a passionate fan base in Detroit. So I understand that I was part of setting a high standard, and we didn't win enough at the end. And so certainly I guess that's why I said to you, I had the conversation with Chris Ilitch. I felt it was time. I had 22 years as a general manager. I'd been the Red Wing for 36 years. It was time. It was just time. And I understand the pro sports business. It was the greatest years of my life. When we moved to Detroit in 1994, when I became the assistant manager, our kids they were 13, 12, 10, and 6. Our kids kind of grew up in Detroit. We've got a ton of friends there. It's home. So I got nothing but fabulous memories. I understand that we didn't win enough at the end. And that's why I felt it was time for I know it was rebuild mode time. Rebuilds are tough. They're longer than you want them to be. And I thought that with all the great times, the great memories, the winning, I was A-OK overseeing a rebuild. But he also had to understand the fans needed to be A-OK with the person running the rebuild. And I just felt that maybe it was time for change.
And I don't like to ask this question, but I'm going to anyway. When you left, is there any thought that when you left that you were going to run away from the team because it looked so bad and the future was so bad, especially with Mr. Ilitch eventually gone? Did that have anything to do with it?
I don't think so. You know, I would say to you, I remember that the last year we made the playoffs and we lost to Tampa Bay. I was at a press conference, year-end press conference, and there was lots of media questions about get into rebuild mode. And I sat there and said, I'm going to fight a rebuild as long as I can. As long as we're, you know, you got Zetterberg and Datsyuk, so I'm going to try to build around them and be as competitive as we can, because I live in the business. I understand the business. And when you go into rebuild mode, I understand how painful it is, how long it's going to be. And I think lots of times people throw around these words and rebuilds, and then they move on, whether they're in the media or they're a fan and then they move on to something else. Rebuilds aren't 1 year. The NHL, we draft 18-year-old players. We're not drafting 22-year-old seniors coming out of college that go right onto your team, other than maybe the 1 and 2 overall pick. The rest of those kids need 2-3 years to become 20, 21. And then if you happen to make the wrong pick, you can just add another year. So part of rebuilding is trading players away, getting lots of picks, lots of spins at the wheel, lots of opportunities to find some late round gems. But you've got 2 or 3 years, 4 years where you're gonna move players away and acquire picks, and then you start on the other side to work your way up. Rebuilds are minimum of 5 years. Sometimes it could be 8 to 10 years. So I just understand. I live in the business. I knew how long it was going to take, and I just felt it was again. I'm A-okay being in charge, but I understand the business and selling tickets and PR and the whole business. And I just felt that my time had come.
All right, I want to go back. Okay, I want to go back to 1983, in your first year as a Detroit Red Wing. You had struggled in the minors for about a decade. You come up, and that the Wings had missed the playoffs 16 of the last 18 years. They finally make it in 83, and you've got a chance. You're a goalie. You've paid your dues. You've been all over Canada and the U.S., Binghamton and Medicine Hat and wherever else, and here you are. And I remember that team very, very well. It's before I became an anchor man and stopped covering things on a day-to-day basis. You're up against 3 other goalies. You're all fine Canadian youth. Greg Stephan, Eddie Mio, Corrado Mikhailov, and Ken Holland. It's your
Corrado
chance.
Corrado Mikhailov, there's a good one.
Corrado Mikhailov. So you've got into 3 games, although Stephan was the number one guy. You're 28 years old. What are your thoughts back then? Can I make it? Is this going to be my chance? Your coach is Nick Pilano. How did it go? And then shortly after that, obviously, you made a different career move. But
I'll tell you 2 stories. Number one, about 2 or 3 years earlier, I'm 26 years old. I'm in the Hartford Whaler organization. I ended up finished making the second team All-Star in the American League, but it's November. I'm having a great year, and I get called up to Hartford. Gordie Howe was on the team, Mark Howe, and they play Saturday at home against Washington, lose 7-3. They go over to Madison Square Garden on Sunday night, and I think I might get the chance to play goal. It's my first NHL game, and Don Blackburn, the coach, calls me in before the game to say I'm going to play that game, and I go in the game that night. I mean, I think I'm 25 for sure, maybe 26. And the first period, they get 15 shots. I give up one goal. I remember the first intermission sitting there and thinking, you know, I was a teammate of Pete Peters. We played junior together in Medicine Hat. Pete at the time was one of the top goalies in the National Hockey
League. Yeah,
and sure. I'm thinking to myself, I'm finally here. I'm finally in the NHL. I've all those years in the minors. And I remember in the second period, they scored 5 goals on me in 21 shots. We're down 6-1. And I remember in the second intermission sitting there to myself in the intermission saying, you're never going to be in the NHL ever again. Really enjoyed the third period because this is your day. This is your day in the sun. And we lost 7-3. And I think I got a year or two later, I signed with the Detroit Red Wings, and I got called up and played 3 games. And then in the summer of 1985, I played 9 years of pro. My contract was up. Jim Devolano called me to tell me that they were going to let me go. My contract was up. They were going to go with the young goalie, Chris Pusey, and they were going in a younger direction. And I'm 29. I got grade 12 education. My wife's a nurse, and we're trying to decide where we're going. My agent's working the phones, but there wasn't a big market for 29-year-old 5'8" minor league goalies. It wasn't a big marketplace. So I was getting a lot of tough calls, and we were talking about going to my wife was going to decided we're going to stay in Vernon, BC. My wife would work at the hospital. I'd go to Okanagan College. We'd go to Vancouver. I'd get some kind of a degree, and we would, you know, find a city and get down some roots. And I come home one day from the liquor store. I had a job at the Vernon liquor store in the summer. My wife had a job at the hospital. Cindy's got the kids up at Lakeview Pool, and it's 85. Our kids are born in 81, 83, and 84. So they're 4, 3, and 1. And my mom comes home and says, Cindy's up at the pool at Lakeview, and she wants you to go up and join her. So I go downstairs. We were in my parents' basement while we were finding a place to live. We just kind of come home from the hockey season. And I come back up, and my mom meets me there, and she says, Ken, I've been hearing the phone been ringing. It doesn't say, how's things going with hockey? Well, not very good, Mom. And she says, what are you going to do if you don't get a hockey job? So I laid the plan out for her, and she says, Ken, you're 29 years of age. You got 3 kids under the age of 5. You got to put food on the table. I said, Mom, I got grade 12 education. I'm a minor pro hockey goalie. I got to get some education. She said, Ken, she said, you got to put food on the table. You got the gift of gab. And she says, lots of people know you in the city. She says, the Vernon News had an ad for Electrolux vacuum cleaner salesperson. She says, I've called the number, the 800 number. The job is open. It's the best vacuum on the market. And she says, I've had that vacuum in my entire life. And she says, 40% of every sale, she says, goes to you. And she said, I'm going to be your first sale. Before I can say anything, she says, Grandma Eastbrecht, my mom's mom, who lived 5 doors down, was going to be my second sale. And I said to my mom, any idea of the status of Aunt Emma's vacuum? She lived 2 doors down. And she said, well, she's family. So I thought this vacuum cleaner sales business was going to go pretty good. And then I started to think, boy, I got to start to leave 23rd Street and start to go out and go door to door. And I didn't. And then I within a couple of days later, the phone rings. It's Jim Devolano and Neil Smith. And Bill Dineen had strongly recommended to Bill and to Neil that they hire me as the Western Scout. Bill Dineen was my coach in Adirondack the 2 years, and we lived in the same apartment complex. So I had a real good relationship with Bill, and Bill put in a massive plug sales pitch for me. And Neil Smith and Jimmy D took his recommendation, and they hired me as the Western Scout. And I was so fortunate to work with Neil for 4 years, and then Neil went to the Rangers. I learned the business. We were really close, and then Jimmy D made me the chief scout of the Red Wings. So I really got to learn the game from the business of the game from some people that were really. And then shortly thereafter, I moved to Detroit, and I got to work with Scotty Bowman. Well, to work with Neil Smith and Jim Devolano and Scotty Bowman, for me, it was like the Harvard of hockey.
Yeah, absolutely.
You mentioned your family, Ken. I know you still say organization a lot, but in 2011, you, your wife, Cindy, and your children, Rachel and Greg, all became U.S. citizens. Was that emotional for you? And why did you guys take that step?
It was emotional. Our one daughter, Julie, was born when we played in Binghamton, so she wasn't American. So we've got 4 children. And our oldest son, is only a Canadian, but Julie was born in the States, and we would live in the States since 1994. We were on green cards, and then we applied for the visa, and then after the green card, and after we got the green card application, we then applied for citizenship. And you know, I went to the States when I was 20 years old, and I lived, for almost from 20 to 30, we lived in the U.S. And then we went back to Canada for about 6-7 years from 85 to 94, not in 8 years. It was, I think, 93 or 94. And so a big part of our life is in the U.S. It was home. And we were in Detroit since 1994, living in the suburbs of Detroit. It was home. It was home for us. Our kids went to Michigan State. Three of our four kids went to Michigan State. Our oldest son went to a university in Connecticut on a hockey scholarship. So it was home for us. And we were so proud to become U.S. citizens. And when my career's over, I still want to, our plan is to spend a good chunk of the year either somewhere in Arizona or somewhere south and come up back up to BC. So the United States is a big part of our life. We've got lots of friends, lots of family, and it also gave us an opportunity by having a work visa. It gave me an opportunity to pursue my passion, which was professional hockey and earn a living playing professional sports. So the U.S. provided Cindy and I and our kids an incredible opportunity.
You know, you can just hear as people listen to you, and we do too, the passion, the energy. You are a real grinder. I know you're in your mid 60s. By the way, we have a mutual friend that we golf together, says you are so intense. You'll play 45 holes a day. You've got unstoppable energy. Where does it come from?
But is he any good?
45 holes a day, it doesn't matter. He's a physical marvel.
Well, I 36 for sure. I'm all in on 36. I'd like to play 36. I can't do it 7 days a week, but I'd love to do 36 5 days a week. I love the competition. I love to grind. I got lots of energy. I like to be doing things. I got a lot of energy, and it's who I am. And I use the word passion. I think passion is a big part. We all need to find our passion. And I've found some passions in my life. You know, family's a passion. And my job, I've been in a sport that I love. I love the sport of hockey, and I never go to work. And then I've got passion of playing golf. It's sort of my outlet to get out and compete. I compete with my brain and my job. I want to compete with my body. So I've found my passions in my life that keep me young and keep me focused. And we're going to go back to 20 minutes ago. That's sort of when I went to, when Steve took over and we, Steve and I and Chris Draper and all our scouts went to Sweden, in April. And as I'm watching the tournament, I knew that I still had, a lot of energy and a lot of passion. And if the right opportunity came along, that I was, I was going to be interested in, and when the call came, it was Edmonton, and you got McDavid and Dreisaitl and a Canadian market, all those things that I knew that I still had the energy and the passion for another opportunity.
I just have one more question. How about you guys? Go ahead. Let's let them go. One more each. Go ahead, Denny.
Right. I've got a couple. Go ahead, Denny.
I can hear your passion. I mean, no one's going to mistake your passion. I can guarantee you that. And then you were selling vacuums. I was selling Fuller brushes. And then when I saw that you just said that you'd given up 5 goals in one period. I gave up 5 home runs in about 7 minutes one night in Baltimore. So I've outflanked you somehow. But here's my question. At this point in time, I see about 50, 60 games a year in the minor leagues baseball. The health of Major League Baseball in the minor leagues is terrific right now. They've got everybody's coming out of the minor leagues right now. They're 6'6". They throw the ball at 99 miles an hour. The health of minor league hockey, how is it now?
Well, I think it's good. We've got a worldwide pool now. This year there's a player, Stutzel from Germany. He's going to go in the top 5, maybe in the top 2 or 3. you know, Marit Sider, who Detroit took last year with the sixth pick overall, is a tremendous young prospect. He's a German player, so Germany's producing high quality players, and obviously we know that Russia and Czech Republic, Sweden, Finland, Canada, the USA are doing the same. So hockey's there's more markets, there's more countries that are developing players that are being able to come over to the National Hockey League and have an impact. There's 31 NHL teams. There's 31 American League teams. Every NHL team has a minor league team. It's a 31 team American Hockey League. Attendance is good. The caliber of play is really good. There's lots of players. You know, there's probably, you know, most American teams probably have anywhere from 4 to 8 players that are going to have play some games, either from being full-time NHL players to play some NHL games. So the American League teams have lots of good young players. So it's hockey's really growing. And it's there's lots of good young players. The average age in our league has gone down. And just like you're talking, you know, I'm a big baseball. I played baseball till I was about 20 years old. You know, Babe Ruth, the Little League, and Babe Ruth, I follow Major League Baseball. Follow the Tigers. I grew up when I was young, a Yankee fan. I remember some of the Yankee players. So certainly, baseball is producing lots of great young players, and our sport is as well.
Kenny, we had the great Ken Dryden on the show recently, and he was talking about the new book he's just written about Scotty Bowman. You mentioned Scotty earlier. You were actually his boss. Eli's reported that at one time Bowman wanted to trade Steve Yzerman. What was Scotty Bowman to work like to work with? Because everybody says he's so difficult.
He was, I became manager in 97, and Scotty was already, we won the cup. I was assistant manager, and then I became manager. So, and then we won the cup in 02, and Scotty stepped away, retired. So I, you know, we were general manager coach for 890 for 5 years. We had an unbelievable relationship. I think he's the best coach in the history of our sport. And there's nobody, he's in his own league. His mind is going 100 miles an hour, and you had to be right on top of. I knew that I needed to have a good night's sleep every day when I was coming to that rink, because he was coming at you from a lot of different angles, and you'd have a conversation yesterday, you pick up the conversation today, and he had everybody on edge. He had the ability, players, he had everybody on their heels a little bit. And that's the way that he felt that he was going to get the most out of everybody. But I enjoyed every minute of working with my relationship and the time with Scotty, both as an assistant general manager. It was an incredible time, and he was like I said, he's the best in the business, but you had to be right on top of your game, because his mind's going a million miles an hour. He's on top of everything. He was aware of everything. He was getting into the internet. I remember he was, when the internet was just coming out in the early 90s, he was figuring out, he had our tech guy come down and in the internet, he was following, he was gathering information. He was always cutting edge. And he was, I think he's the best bench boss in the history of the league. His ability in game to make adjustments based upon how our players are playing or how the other teams are playing, he was the best at it.
I don't think anyone would disagree.
Eli, you got another one for?
The reason we're talking to you today is not because you played 4 games in the National Hockey League as a goalie. It's because of the 22 straight.
Or go ahead, Eli. He had a career goals against of 4.96.
That's okay.
Score me six. You got 2 in the bank. Score me 6. You got not every night, but most nights.
But I guess what I want to ask you is as a general manager, some of the things you did in 02, which was really your team. You get Chelios, you get Luke Robitaille, Dominic Hasek, you get these veterans, you bring in Brett Hull, you get 9 players that are in the Hall of Fame in that roster. You build it somehow with young players and you win a Stanley Cup. In 08, when we had Ken Dryden on, as Bob referred to, I mentioned how Chelios in 08, 46, Hasek 43, Dallas Drake 38, and yet you got the younger guys in there. What is your greatest achievement? Because obviously you have a certain genius about putting together the the young, the old, the future, the present, and tying it to the past. What was your greatest achievement when you look back? Which Stanley Cup or whatever you did with all those 10 straight, you know, Central Division titles and all that, do you look back at most?
Was that a question or a closing
argument? That's a question.
Argument?
That's a question.
You know, I think my time with Scotty Bowman and Jim Devolano, you know, Jimmy D was with the New York Islanders and worked with Bill Torrey and Al Arbor. And obviously Jimmy was the chief scout and they built a dynasty. And then he left there and he came to Detroit and he went building through the draft. And then to work with Scotty, I had some incredible mentors. And I think what I learned was how to team build. They knew how to team build. You know, it's not an accumulation of players. It's having your star power and building around it and having your grind line, you know, the McCarty, Maltby and Draper, and having that chemistry in the locker room and off the ice. And I think that's what I was able to, that's the biggest thing that I learned from Jim Devolano and Scotty Bowman. Number one is, you know, acquire talent. And you got to either make the picks or you got to hire the people that can find the talent. And that's what Jim Devolano did for Al Arbor. And I'd like to think that Neil Smith and Ken Holland did for Jimmy D, and then Jimmy Neal and Håkan Andersson did for Ken Holland. It's identifying the people that can find players either through passion, through connections, through their assessments, but somehow they find players. And when you get those players, it's trying to build build a team and to have that, you know, the pieces that you need to try to build a team that can compete for a championship. And I think that's what I was able to learn early on in my career. You know, when I retired at 29 years of age, I understood over the next number of years the importance, because the Red Wings were rebuilding, the importance of we got to get talent. I heard that from Jim Devolano and Neil Smith. And then as we started to get better in the early 90s, working with Scotty Bowman as the assistant manager and Jim Devolano, and seeing the way Scotty tweaked around and made moves. He was the coach and director of player personnel, and the moves that he made ultimately, you know, as a chief scout, I'm wondering, why would we trade a third round pick for Slava Fetisov, who's in the press box in New Jersey? And I watched Scotty Bowman, and I'm the chief scout, I'd like the third round pick. Well, I watched what Slava Fetisov, what he meant to the Detroit Red Wings. So I was able to learn from Jim Devolano about player assessment, player evaluation, and hiring people that can find players, and then working with Scotty Bowman and Jimmy D in team building. And I got to learn that in the early parts of my you know, non-playing career.
Kenny, one more from me, and we don't have much more time, and I know you don't have much more time, but I'm dying to know this. Best player in the Detroit Red Wings, most talented, I should say, the last 3 years has been Andreas Athanasiou. You saw that too. That's why you brought him to Edmonton. What is wrong with this kid? Why won't he live up to his potential?
Well, I think he had 33 goals or 32 goals 2 years ago, and it looked like he was about to break out and start to become you know, you score 30 goals in the NHL and you do it a couple of times, it's hard to do. So
he should be a 40 to 50 guy.
He had a tough year this year, and I'm certainly made the, you know, Steve and I made a deal, and I'm hoping that this opportunity for Andreas, that he's going to grab it. So he does have talent. I think he's in the process of figuring out how do you put that talent on an everyday basis to max out your potential.
Well, Kenny, you brought a lot of joy for many, many decades to people in Detroit. Best of luck in the bubble there. Hope everything goes well for you. And I know with your energy level, you're going to be with the Oilers for quite some time. And best of luck. Really appreciate you joining us today. Thanks.
Thanks, guys. Thanks, Jay.
Kenny, thank you very much.
Thank you, Kenny.
Have a great day.
How about that? But, yeah. But it just bugs me a little bit, the attitude. So many Red Wings fans almost hate this guy.
Oh, really?
Because he didn't play well the last 3 years?
What have you done for me lately? That's so
typical. That's ridiculous.
I think he handled it very well when you asked him that. And that's just the way it is.
Let me tell you something. I want to point one thing out about what he said. When he talks about being identifying talent out there in the minor leagues or elsewhere, that is an inherent talent on his part.
Mm-hmm.
That is not easy to do. You and Bob probably could not do it. First of all, you have to be around the league all the time. You have to be around the game. This is not a disparaging remark, but I've noticed the best guys are guys who know who they are, when they're ready, and how they're going to do what they're supposed to do.
Well, it's an inherent genius. That's what
it
you're
is
saying.
An inherent genius, and that's
and a lot of hard.
Because there's no formula. It's a feel. And that's what Eisenman said when he came here. You got to get lucky. Kenny said that too.
And Bowman
things fell into place, and he was lucky in that he had Devilano and Bowman that he didn't choose, but they were here, and he learned from them. But you know, success is luck is when opportunity meets preparation. He was ready. He got a little lucky. And he certainly carried for a guy who played parts of four NHL games to be in the Hockey Hall of Fame is pretty impressive.
And Bowman had more than his fair share.
Yeah, the only reason you took that ridiculous cheap shot at Eli and me is because you remember when I said on TV in Detroit years ago that Ralph Sampson was going to be a much better player than Isaiah Thomas, and the Pistons should trade Isaiah Thomas and try to get Ralph Sampson. Bob, that's the only reason you think I couldn't be a general manager.
Let me get my list. That's how many reasons.
You had a big list there.
I think it's absurd because we would never qualify or want to or think we could even be a general manager. So
you couldn't, Eli, you couldn't because you don't make enough time for your life. All you want to do is play golf every damn day.
Well, so does
Kenny Holland's managed that.
I guess so.
No, we have a mutual friend who took him out to Arizona to play with a bunch of guys. And he said, I've never
seen
such an animal like that playing all day long.
I used to play 36 a day every day when I lived in Florida, but no longer.
Well, you weren't 65 like he is. We'll see you next on Thursday for another edition of No Filter Sports.
Yeah, thanks, everybody.
Stay safe.